Fred Film Radio, Venice Film Festival, Italy.
Fred Film Radio, I'm Matt McCucci from the 77th Venice International Film Festival, and I'm very pleased to be joined by filmmaker Marawi Garima and actor Dennis Lindsay, presenting the film Residue, one of the best films I've seen in the festival so far, possibly the best film I've seen.
Wow.
No, thank you.
It's a pleasure for me to have you here. And, you know, our listeners may not be familiar with the film yet, and I kind of always hate to ask the question, but it's sort of a necessary one. So, Marawi, would you be able to maybe tell us a few words about the story of the film and just...
Yeah, no doubt. Yeah, for sure. I mean, Residue, it's about a young man who comes home after many years away, looking to make a film about, you know, his childhood, where he grew up, you know, his friends and stuff. And basically, he finds everybody just kind of scattered to the wind, you know what I mean? Friends missing, you know, locked up and things like that. So he's just, you know, trying to put the pieces back together.
Yeah. How familiar are you guys with this particular setting? This may be a naive question, but just to get to know you guys as well, I think, you know, it's a good place to start.
I mean, Dennis, you want to take that one?
I mean, with the setting, very familiar with it because we're living in it at the moment. So with my take on the whole Residue, when I think about the meaning of Residue, you just think about what's left. So we think about the movie in itself and the gentrification that's going on in our area, and we're just trying to decide which was left of what we have, and that's continually going on, not just in D.C., but a lot of urban areas and every areas in different places in the world. So it's relatable to everybody, not just D.C. in general.
Exactly.
It is, yeah. That's right. You know, I was going to say, actually, Marawi, I actually happened to have watched the introduction to the film that you recorded. It's a short video on YouTube that I found.
Nice.
And you mentioned the word rage in it. So the film is sort of fueled by rage, and you call it also a weapon. And I just wanted to know what you meant by that, and take it away. if there's any rage that you want to let out.
Nah, man. You know, I mean, I tell you straight up right now, like, that's something we don't shy away from when it comes to this film. We want people to be angry when they walk away from the project because, you know, so many times black people are, you know, encouraged to just stifle their feelings, you know, their righteous rage at the things that's happening to them. You know what I mean? That's the history of black people around the world. So for me, you know, when I go to D.C., man, you know, my attention is up to here, you know, with everything that's going on. So the project is that from the beginning. It was an angry project at the outset, and it's very you know, it has maintained that throughout. And you know, I think that in that way, it's important for me that people watch the film and take that, you know, anger and channel it into something to actually work, you know, in any way that they feel encouraged, you know, to take back the city that we helped to build. You know what I mean? And like Dennis was saying, it's not just D.C. It's cities all over the world.
Right. You know, rage can be a driving force for creation, and something creation then can be
Into
productivity.
I'm also saying, yeah, you know, when I was making that video, the other part was what's going on in 2020 in America in general, you know.
Oh, yeah.
George Floyd, all that, man, the rage boils over, you know what I mean? Everywhere you look, you just see people just, you know, exploding. And I think that, thinking about that as I was recording the video, I was about to throw my phone, man. I was just, you know.
Yeah, totally. I understand that. Dennis, do you agree with that? Like, that rage?
Yes,
you feel that rage?
Yeah, I totally agree with just everything just going on. And like I said, also just living in it. So it's not just doing it just because. It's like I actually, you know, been a part of the rage, or just, like I said, part of the movie, just the whole gentrification, just the whole, it's just that, just makes you angry about a lot of things, and then things, it's like a domino effect. So one thing happened, and the next thing happened, and you just can't do nothing but just get angry and upset and just get, I'm saying, outraged by what everything is just going on. And it's so much you can't really do about it at the moment, but with this movie, it just shows the light, or brings the light into how people really feel. Because a lot of times we don't have movies to show like how we really feel, especially from where we're from in Washington, D.C. So I feel like with this, it's really going to open eyes to everybody. Once again, like I said, it's relatable. And you're saying, you just, the rage, everybody will feel the rage and feel like, you know what, I feel this movie, I can relate to it, and this movie is me.
I would like to say just one last thing on that. You know, for me, I felt very powerless being in D.C. when I, you know, when I came back home in my own kind of story, you know, and I felt there was nothing I could really do. And it wasn't until I started working on this project that I started to feel that I had some type of weapon against it. And that's why I do refer to it as a weapon, because it's the biggest weapon in my tool set that I can use, you know, to attack this thing that, you know, this whole system of oppression that we seeing out, playing out. So it wasn't until I started working in that way that then I started to feel like I, you know, I could do something, you know, less powerless than I had felt before, you know what I mean?
Well, actually, the lead character of the film is a filmmaker working on making a film, and so I was kind of going to ask you whether it was an autobiographical story that you were telling.
Yeah, I tell you straight up, you know, as filmmakers, one of the things that we do, you know, we try to hide ourselves in the project. We try to act like, you know, it's not about me, it's not autobiographical, but, you know, anybody who's worked on any artistic endeavor knows that it's inevitable that some of you is going to be imbued into the project. And so for us, you know, it was, I was on that as well. I was trying to hide that, you know, but it wasn't until we started shooting in the neighborhood where I grew up, you know, with the folks I grew up with and their children playing our generation, you know what I mean? That I was like, why? This is 100%, you know, about, you know, kind of the way I grew up, why would I hide from that? And so the more we started to lean into that, the more the project started really just coming alive, man, you know, really vibrating.
It's just the whole people almost being forced to disappear. I don't know whether that's the right expression, but all these people moving in and, you know, just doing whatever they want.
Yeah.
Because they, essentially, they can, you know, that's what they think, and that's almost what the world seems to be designed to do.
You know, it's because, you know, they have the ability to play out their, you know, their whatever they want, and black folks can't really, you know.
And a lot of times it stems from broken promises as well.
Yeah.
So a lot of times we've been told that, yeah, you'll be able to set it up for you, you'll get this, but when it comes to it, it's like, oh, yeah. Nah, I'm sorry, yeah. We can't do anything for
yeah.
you. So
yeah.
A lot of that, like I said, come from rage, come from broken promises as well. So when it goes to, say, D.C., they promise to rebuild the project
right.
and tell people, like, yeah, move out. When we rebuild it, you can move back in, but they raise the rent or raise the mortgage on the place, and in our community, you really can't afford it. So, you know what I'm saying, it leaves us in the dust, and we get mad because, like, what happened? You said that we would be able to move back into where we've been at all our life, and now people like to coming in and people controlling it.
Yeah.
And then doing things that you feel like they can't do. So that's, like I said, rage comes from that world of broken promises.
And we're talking about a tight-knit community, too.
Yeah,
oh, man.
For sure.
An extended family.
I'm telling you.
You know, there's so much that I'd like to ask you, actually. But, Dennis, I wanted to kind of ask you something related to the character you play in the film.
Mm-hmm.
Because you played the character. You filled those shoes. So you felt what the character feels. And I was kind of thinking, one of the things that he's skeptical of is representation, though.
Mm-hmm.
And I wondered how you felt about that. I mean, do you feel like, you know, people coming in trying to represent
cameras.
Certain situations, but then you're like, well, why are you doing it? You're doing it out of self-interest or not? But how do you feel about that?
It's crazy because my character is, I wouldn't say it's no different than me or anybody I've been with, my family, friends. Just want to know what, like I said, your purpose. So you, like I said, with the story, like he said, he leaves and comes back. So it was like, all right, what is your purpose of trying to write this film? Are you trying to help us? Are you doing it for your own self-progression? Or are you trying to help? He said you're doing it for to help everybody, but I'm not seeing it for everybody.
Right.
So
and where you been?
You know, where you been? We've been here. Like I said, my character, he stayed in D.C., going through the struggle, going through the hassle of a lot of things going on in the area. So when the character Jay comes back and want to come back and write a movie, it's like, why did you leave anyway? You left us. And it's kind of like a resentment towards him. So me, I kind of feel it because, like I said, it's that whole anger thing. Like, man, like, what is your purpose? Like, why are you here? Like, what are you really trying to do? Like, if you really want to help us, like, really help us, don't do it for your own self-gain.
In a world where everybody is set and positioned to exploit black people, you know what I'm saying? Where that's just the norm. And, you know, going to film school, all you see, man, is just, unfortunately, you know what I'm saying, like, young kids ready to just write a script about the hood, you know, go make some money off black people's pain, you know, exploit that to the fullest.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, I worried constantly about am I being exploitative in this way? Is that, you know, am I no better than these people who, you know, I see doing this shit, white and black? Because, you know, black people are a cash cow and you can exploit, you know, with no consequence. And I never wanted to do that, but
No, yeah, absolutely. I was thinking, actually, with this film, too, with your work, then you could sort of counter that, you know, because you're telling the story of your people, essentially. And you know, I wanted to ask you one last question, because I know that we're running out of time. There's so many things that I'd like to ask you again, but about the style of the film, because I found that amazing too. It's almost like it's a very immersive style. But I don't know. I mean, would you maybe be able to describe it a little bit? I loved, for example, the fact that some of the scenes sort of fade into each other, gives it like a dreamlike feeling. And I could go on and on, but I'd rather
than
you talk about it.
Well, I could just hit a couple points quick. One, you got to see my parents' films to understand my films. Both of my parents are filmmakers, and I come out of that. You know, my grandpa was a playwright back in Ethiopia.
What are their names, just so that the listeners know?
My mother's name is Sharikiana Aina. She's an incredible documentarian, you know. And my father's name is Haile Garima. And yeah, they have a whole suite of films that we self-distribute, because you know we operate, you know, by any means necessary, and often that means without resources. And that's how this film came to be. And to be honest, that informs the style. You know, that's the economic base of the style of the film. We ain't had nothing, and so basically, you know, a lot of the scenes we shot, you know, stylistically are that because we had no choice. We didn't have police car, you know, so the police is just sound off screen.
That's true.
Yeah,
I thought that was great.
Yeah, we didn't have, you know, guns, you know, so the drive by off screen, you know, all these things that we had to solve creatively, you know, and in a clever way, because we didn't have the money. And even in the editing, a lot of it was badly shot, you know, once again for various reasons. But you know, the creative process of kind of making it work, you know, that comes out of my dad's style of filmmaking.
Yeah,
it'll make so much sense once you see his films.
But it is beautiful, and I love the way you're saying that, because like it just makes me admire it all the more. I mean,
thank you. No, it's imperfect, and we don't hide from that, man. My dad told us the night before our first day of production, he took us all to the side. He was like, "Yo, this not looking good." You know what I mean?
The day before you start.
Right. But he was like, "But it's good. Jay ain't got $1 million or, you know, a whole year to shoot." You know, he said the urgency of the production will find its way into the film. And so just let it be.
That's a great line. Yeah, that's a great thing to say, actually. I think it's an inspiring thing to hear for budding filmmakers listening to this podcast conversation. We have to wrap it up, unfortunately.
No problem.
Been an absolute pleasure speaking with you.
Thank you for having us.
My pleasure.
I remind our listeners, the film is called Residue, and this is Fred Film Radio, the Festival Insider.
Fred Film Radio, 24/7 on Fred.fm and smartphone apps.